Jakten på mördaren är tillbaka med säsong 18. 10 nya mordfall som skakade världen och polisens jakt på mördaren. Först ut denna säsong kommer du få höra 4 av Sveriges mest gripande och mest omskrivna fall.
Snart därefter upptäcker de Lisa Holms jacka och mopedhjälm i en rishög på gården.
Vill du höra alla avsnitt av säsongen direkt kan du göra det helt gratis i appen Podplay.
Hej, Hasse Brontén heter jag och det är dags för ännu ett avsnitt av podden Snutsnack. Ja, det rullar ju på den här podden och vi har våra poliser som gästar och idag är det så också att en polis gästar. Men den här gästen jobbar inte i Sverige utan han jobbar i Kalifornien som polis. Det är ju så att Snutsnack har lyssnare ute i världen och José, som gästen heter, hans fru Minna hörde av sig och berättade att de skulle komma till Stockholm och undrade om inte en polis från Kalifornien kunde vara av intresse i podden. Och självklart så tycker vi att det är jätteintressant. Så jag har fått öva upp min skolengelska och ni får ha överseende med engelskan. Men jag tycker att det rullade på bra och jag hoppas att ni lyssnare som är lite ovana på att lyssna på engelska poddar, eller med amerikanska ska jag säga i det här fallet, tycker att det är helt okej trots allt. Ni vet ju att vi finns på Instagram och på Facebook. Följ oss gärna där. Tagga in kompisar och vänner och dela. Prenumerera gärna på podden på iTunes. Ja, så där. Då säger jag väl som man sa på banorna på Hill Street på den tiden och där jag också har fått den frasen ifrån som jag alltid avrundar med. Be careful out there och ha en riktigt trevlig lyssning. 13:10 Ja, hej kära lyssnare. Det här är första gången jag kommer att säga så här i min podd. Very welcome, José. José.
Yes.
How's my pronunciation?
It's good.
That's good. This is the premiere. This is my first American guest in this podcast called Snutsnack, which would be translated into maybe cop talk or something like that. How are you?
I'm good. I'm honored to be here.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you for having me. You're visiting Sweden for the first time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what do you think about Sweden? This far.
It's a bit cold.
Yeah.
Compared to California in the States. But it's nice. I really like the heritage and how everything is. There's so much history in the country.
Yeah. It's an old country.
Yes.
Yeah. And we also have another guest in the studio. Men du är från Sverige?
Ja, jag är från Huddinge, söder om Stockholm. Och jag är då gift med José, träffade honom i USA. Och nu drog jag med mig honom hit till kalla Stockholm. Så det är skönt.
Och du heter?
Minna.
Minna, precis. Minna och José. And I think we will just try to speak English from now.
For sure.
And hopefully my listeners are about as good in English as I am, and I think this will be this will be doable. So, as I understand, Minna, she wrote me from California and told me that you were going to come to Stockholm and that your husband is working as a police officer in California. California, José, tell me, where in California are you working as a police officer?
It's in a city called Costa Mesa. It's within Orange County. It's maybe 45 minutes from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if we just... Because in Sweden we have one national police force.
Yes.
And but it's not that in the United States.
No, it's quite different. Each city has its own police force. And each county has a sheriff's department that looks over the entire county, and then we have highway patrol officers, which are another separate agency.
Because they just patrol the highways.
Only the highways.
Yeah.
Yes.
But there is a lot of crime going on the highways, aren't there?
There is, mostly the drunk drivers. It's very popular, especially around the holidays. Yeah, and people driving too fast on their phones.
And criminal people are traveling in cars.
Yes, they do like to travel in cars. Yes.
How come? When did you come up with the idea to work as a police officer?
I would say in about high school, I realized there was something that I was very interested in. I've never wanted to work behind a desk. I like being outside, and I also enjoy helping others. And the area where I grew up is a very rural, agricultural town, but with lots of law enforcement in that area. And it always seemed a very admirable career.
Was that a safe area where you grew up?
Mostly. It was about 30 minutes north of the Mexican border.
Okay. Pretty close. Yeah.
So pretty close to Mexico, but rather safe for being close to the border.
Your name sounds a little bit Mexican, Jose.
I am.
So you have a Mexican heritage. Yeah.
I do, yes, both my parents.
So you speak fluent Spanish?
Yes, yeah. I'm considered a Spanish translator at work for court and, you know, interrogations and whatnot.
So a very interesting thing about that is whenever they need you at a call for, say, like a person only speaks Spanish, they call for him and he has to go through a call and help out with a translation for an example, a Mexican guy that only speaks Spanish and no English.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you do have a lot of people in the area who only speak Spanish then?
Yes, it's very common that a lot of people speak mostly Spanish. Some speak a little bit of English, but for court purposes, if their primary language is Spanish and that's mostly what they understand, then that's what should be spoken to get the most accurate representation of the facts. So that way the investigation and the prosecution can be accurate.
Yeah,
so we don't put the wrong people in jail.
I understand. Yeah. It's nice. I mean, Americans, they're not famous for having a second language.
This is true.
So when did you apply to, and the police academy, how are they? I mean, is the city, do the city have like a police academy or the county, or how does it work?
The county has a police academy that's run by the sheriff's department, and all the individual cities hire people and send them to the county academy.
Okay.
Yes.
And how old were you when you went to the academy?
I was 25, turning 26.
Okay. And how was the training?
It was very intense.
It was? How long is your training to become a police officer?
It's 6 months. We don't live in the academy. We have to commute from home every day. And it's Monday through Friday, approximately 10 hours each day for 6 months.
Oh, yes. That's long hours.
Yes.
And a very fun and interesting fact about the academy that you went through is that it's very paramilitary. So they're extremely strict about what you do and how you do it. I just know from my friend that goes to this police academy in Sweden is that they don't like... In America, you can't have any facial hair. You have to shave all your hair. Like, it's extremely intense, and you have to march on campus and everything like that.
Oh, my God.
So, it's, like, very interesting.
Yeah. You cannot just walk to the restroom. You have to march everywhere you go.
Oh, my God.
In synchrony with the people in front and behind you.
Well, that's like in the military, yeah.
It is, and you have to salute everybody, the staff.
Oh, yeah.
You have to go in pairs. You cannot walk anywhere by yourself.
Oh, my Lord.
On the grounds. Yeah. And you're constantly being, I guess you could say, questioned or interrogated, where they're asking you questions while you're walking in the hallways to the restroom or to class. They're constantly quizzing you, testing you on your knowledge.
About anything.
I mean, about anything related to police work.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But so how was this? You weren't in the army or anything before?
No, I was not.
So was it this like a a little bit of a surprise?
A little bit. However, I did play sports in high school. One of the sports I played was football, American football.
Yeah.
And the coach I had then was similar. He had a military background.
Okay.
So he ran his team very like a military and very strict, stern. So I already had a little bit of experience with that.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
How did you react to this? Do you think this was a good way of training new officers? I mean, being this strict?
I think it is, mainly because you have the educational environment where you're learning about the laws and different things related to drugs and alcohol and police situations, but you're also having to do it under stress,
yeah,
which, you know, from the job, it can be very stressful at times. And it's very easy to recall things and to analyze situations with no stress. But when you throw high stress into it, it can make things more difficult. So the purpose of this academy that I went to is it's considered a high stress academy.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So you were constantly under stress for 6 months.
Yes.
To become a police officer.
Yes. I had no hair on my head, but that was because we had to shave it. But it would appear that I lost my hair because, you know, of the stress. But no, I had to shave it actually. So yes.
But you guys, had you already met before him going to the academy or?
No. So actually we met while he was in the academy, which is hilarious because he was very like, he was very fit because he had to do extremely a lot of like physical activity throughout the academy too. So they did like, I don't know, like a couple hundred like push-ups a day and things like that and just running everywhere. And but then I met him and he had, as he said, like no hair on his head and he was just very skinny. But I mean, I liked him. So that's when we met.
Okay. Yeah. And you're still together. You're,
yeah,
you're married now. So
yes.
Okay. So, okay, but what happens after 6 months? You're going through the academy and are you like just ready to go out as a police officer or do you have like someone coaching you when you get out on the streets? How does it work?
So after your 6 months of academy training, you go back to your city department and then you go through what's called field training.
Yeah.
And you have different phases. So there's phase one, which is more learning the layout of the city, all the different locations, how to use the radio, how to use the computer in the car, how to do...
So that's not taught at the academy?
It is. However, there are certain very specific details that the academy does not cover, because each department has slightly different policies.
Okay.
And different equipment.
Okay.
So it would be very hard for them to teach each style to every department in the academy, because there's probably close to a dozen different city police departments in the same academy.
Okay.
Yes.
I understand.
Yes.
So how many officers work at your county?
Approximately 150.
150. Oh,
yes.
Okay. And how big is the county? Can we, if you have like...
It's so it's 16 square miles. So 16 Ooh. Miles by 16 miles. It's not perfectly square, but it's roughly that size. So it's not considered a large city, but it's not considered the smallest city. It would be somewhere in the middle.
Okay, because I think we count police officer per inhabitant. I don't know how many you have back over there, but
we have approximately 120,000 residents in our city.
You're 150 officers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And okay, to go back to, from where you were talking about coming out and learning the radio and and everything like that. When did you patrol the streets? I mean, just when you came out, or
yes. So you immediately start going to handle calls for service. However, you have the training officer with you who is analyzing how you're doing the job. grading you, but then also ensuring that you're doing everything safely while you're learning at the same time.
Is he as strict as is it as strict as it was at the academy, or is it cooling down a little bit when
it's cooling down a little bit, I would say. It also varies by each training officer. They all have different styles.
Yeah.
But it's definitely more relaxed. You would still refer to that person as sir or ma'am.
Oh yeah.
However, you wouldn't call them by their first name as their being your training officer. That wouldn't be very inappropriate.
Okay.
So it's still a little bit militaristic.
Yeah.
But a little bit more calm.
Okay.
Also, a good thing to point out there is that you're on probation as soon as you get in the city, which is, if you're on probation, you cannot really screw up that much, because then they can still fire you for that. So how long is the probation part?
It's a year and a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
So during that time, you still have to like act really good, and you have to do everything basically perfect.
Maybe not perfect.
There's room for some minor errors.
Yeah, you can have some errors here and there. The biggest thing that they look at when you're in training is to not repeat the same error over and over.
Yeah.
Because there's different errors, but let's say, for example, you search somebody, you do a poor search, and you bring them into the jail, and they still have a knife with them.
Yeah.
If you make poor searches multiple times, they'll fire you for that.
Okay.
Because you didn't learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Oh. That would be hard to fire a Swedish police officer, even if he didn't find that knife.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but when you patrol the streets at home, do you patrol by yourself in a car, or do you go in pairs?
So for patrol purposes, we just do one person per car.
Yeah.
We're not considered a large city, and our city is split up into four quadrants, 1, 2, 3, 4. And you have usually four officers per quadrant. So your follow officer or your partner are usually pretty close by.
Okay.
So, and then when the dispatcher sends a call, depending on the type of call, they usually send two officers to the call, unless it's something very, very low level,
okay,
like a barking dog that's being annoying.
Yeah, I understand. Versus,
you know, a couple fighting, they would definitely send, you know, at least two officers.
Okay, so then you work mostly in pairs, but you arrive with two cars.
Correct.
As in Sweden, when we always go two and two.
Yes.
Okay, you've been working now for a little bit more than 3 years?
Yeah, just about.
Just about three
yeah,
years.
Just about
and
three
how,
years, yeah.
Is it okay being a police officer?
Yeah, I like it. It's fun. Every day is a different day.
Yeah.
You never go to the same call. Sometimes you see the same people. You have your repeat offenders.
Yeah.
But for the most part, each day is different. It's exciting. There's ups and downs. It's kind of like a roller coaster sometimes, but I enjoy it.
And Minna, we were talking about this just before we started to record, that being a police wife,
yes,
in America is something we don't talk about in Sweden. I mean, because it's something different. Tell us about it.
Yeah, for sure. So we met when he was in the academy, and then right when he got out on the streets, it was a lot of like thinking for me, just even though we were just dating back then, but just the fact of like, okay, he's out in the streets, and in America there's a lot of violence and threats towards the police, and I don't really think there's that much here, but of course there's a little bit of threats, but in America, like, there's so many guns out on the streets, and just the major, like, okay, well, he might just not come home at night. And when we started, and then we started dating, when I was like alone at night and also talking to other girls that were like dating other cops, it was just a lot of worrying just that they wouldn't make it home safe. And also just the stigma of the police. It's just like, yeah, you're worrying. And also like that maybe he'll get shot, and that's scary. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of guns in California. We don't have as much. But I mean, Sweden is a quiet place on earth, but it's getting worse. And we can see the police officers are shooting. They're firing their arms more often now than, like, I quit my job as a police officer 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. I didn't shoot once. I mean, I pulled my gun and everything. I was in two shootings, but I didn't shoot. But it's more common now. And as we can see when we look at, I mean, TV shows like Cops, where reporters, they just ride along with police officers, we can see that you are, I mean, in general, American police officers are very strict when it comes to their own security and when they approach a car and everything. Is it like that for you when you work?
Yes, definitely. I would say one thing they teach us in the training is to always look out for threats.
Yeah.
And always run through your head, okay, what's the worst possible thing that could happen right now?
Yeah.
And then what am I going to do if that worst possible thing actually occurs? Yeah. As opposed to walking into a situation assuming the best is going to happen and nothing bad will happen, essentially. So it's better to assume the worst and plan for it every time. So usually when I walk up to, let's say I stop a car for a broken taillight at night, I usually walk up to the car off to an angle a little bit so I can see into the driver's side door and window. And usually I have hand on my gun as I'm approaching with my flashlight out.
You always have your hand on your gun, even for like a broken taillight?
No, not necessarily, but I usually just kind of keep it on my hip, kind of in the general area.
Yeah.
And then I have like my flashlight out and I'm checking to see, you know, is there something? Because I would rather much be prepared for something if there's a surprise, some kind of threat, as opposed to walking up with my pen and notepad, you know, ready to scribble down their name, and then being surprised and having to drop that and then, assess and do something.
Because isn't the domestic violence and also the traffic stops the two most dangerous things for you guys to do and the most, like, dangerous?
Yeah, I would say traffic stops and domestic violence calls are probably where most officers get shot at or stabbed or end up, you know, being killed in America.
Sådär, innan vi lyssnar vidare på Jose och hans berättelse kring att jobba som polis i Kalifornien, så såklart en push för livepodden som är den 1 april på Skala Teatern i Stockholm. Ja, hur är det att spela polis utan att vara polis? Jag tycker personligen att om du kikar in på Snutsnats Instagram så ser vi ju Eddie Murphy när han spelar sin roll i 48 timmar. Där spelar han ju polis fast han inte är polis och gör det på ett fantastiskt sätt. Eva Rös och Micke Tongvin ska få berätta hur det är att spela polis utan att vara det. Det och många andra intressanta berättelser tror jag vi kommer få höra den här kvällen live podden den 1 april. Gå in på snutsnack.se, läs mer där och glöm inte, köp en biljett också. Så ses vi den 1 april. Hej! When you came out and you pulled your first pulled the car over and it was the first time, how was that for you? I mean, did you feel like, I remember when someone just stole something, I just felt my pulse was going up and everything. How was it for you? I mean, like the first stops and everything.
Yeah, at first I think I was a little bit nervous, and you could tell because everything we do, we record. Our department doesn't have cameras yet, but we have voice recorders on our belt that record the entire interaction. And at the end of the day, you have to download those recordings and type in some information about them, like, oh, the traffic stop, you know, however. And so you're listening to your recordings, and I can remember listening to my first recordings, you know, talking to people that I just stopped, and I'm like, do I really sound that bad? I sound kind of nervous. Now it's a lot more calm.
Yeah.
I sound a lot more, you know, under control and just kind of confident.
Yeah.
I mean, it's perfectly normal. I mean, of course. What kind of equipment do you carry on your belt when you work?
Okay. So I from the center, there's a buckle, and then the next thing over would be my voice recorder. The next thing over from that voice recorder, I have a handcuff case.
Yeah.
That carries two pairs of handcuffs.
Oh, yeah.
And then after that, I would have my my gun, and then I have a collapsible baton behind the gun.
Yeah.
And then to my left of the buckle, I have a taser.
Yeah.
And then I have a magazine pouch for two magazines for the gun. And then I have a baton ring for the like the long straight stick type baton.
Okay, yeah.
That we use for like crowd control, yeah. Riots. And then I have my my radio.
Yeah.
And then I keep my back completely clear of any gear or anything on my belt, just to prevent stuff from digging into my back when I'm in the car and whatnot.
It's not comfortable.
No, it's not.
Is that a personal preference, or are some guys wearing stuff on the back, or?
Yeah, so some people have their stuff set up differently. Mm. The only major requirement is that your taser and your gun have to be on opposite sides. And that's because there's been instances where officers have gotten very excited in the heat of a moment and thought they've went to grab the taser but grabbed the gun instead.
Oh, yeah.
And they've accidentally shot people because the taser and the gun were in the same area.
Oh my God.
So now really you have to have it on separate sides.
Yeah.
So that way it's more mental distinguishment between the two.
Yeah. And what kind of gun do you carry?
We carry the new SIG Sauer P320.
Okay.
Firearm in 9mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Swedish police also carry the SIG Sauer, but I think it's the P228 or 26 or something.
The 26 sounds familiar. I think it's
26 maybe. A lot of years ago.
Yeah.
But I know there's a rumor now, because I think the Swedish police will change their gun,
mm-hmm.
and it will be probably, as rumors, I've only heard rumors, so it will probably be the Glock.
The Glock, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like most people are going to the Glock.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 years ago, we used to carry the HK.
Okay.
The USP 40, which internationally, HK is...
That's Heckler & Koch. Yeah,
Heckler & Koch is very popular.
Yeah.
But for some reason, our officers didn't care for it too much.
Okay.
But so now we're using the 6-hour. But the Glock is very popular too.
Yeah. You also have... what kind of guns do you have in your car? Because those are... You have some extra ones in there.
Yes, we have a shotgun in the car, and then I have my own patrol rifle as well in the vehicle.
Okay.
Yes.
So what's the difference between a patrol rifle and the shotgun?
The shotgun would be, it's a Remington 870. It's a 12-gauge shotgun that has a feeding tube of 4 rounds.
Okay.
4 shotgun shells. And then my rifle is... one that we're allowed to buy and build yourself,
okay.
Which I've...
This is America too, Swedish.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And that's a Colt M4 carbine, which is a very military-grade weapon, I guess you could call
and
it.
And how would you use these weapons? Can you give me just a couple of examples?
The rifle you would definitely use on something. You would take out to a situation, maybe... like a hostage type situation, active shooter, maybe you're clearing a building, you're doing a search of a building that's very large, maybe a big, huge warehouse. You know, your handgun obviously has a effective range of a certain amount of feet or meters, whereas, you know, the rifle is way beyond that. So it just depends whenever it's appropriate. But if we go into maybe a small house or apartment and we think someone's dangerous in there, we're probably not going to take a big bulky rifle or shotgun, because that's going to prevent us from being able to move around smoothly at least. So, and the shotgun, it's similar to the rifle. However, it has the slugs, the rifled slugs, the solid lead core, or the buckshot where it spreads out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're both effective. It just depends on the situation you may...
But how do you store these guns? I mean, if you go into you were talking about a barking dog before.
Yeah.
I mean, are the guns still in your car?
They are. In between the two front seats, there's a space with... like a locking rack where the shotgun and the rifle sit upright, standing up, and they have a locking mechanism Okay. And that locking mechanism is controlled by a button, and it can only be turned on and off when the vehicle is on.
Okay.
So you need to have the key for the car, turn it on, and then hit the button, and then it releases the lock on the guns. Okay. So if I go to the barking dog call, I should be smart enough to hopefully not leave my car on with the key in, because then somebody could break the window and steal them.
Yeah, I
so,
understand.
Yeah.
Okay. As I told you also before we started to record, I went to and participated in a course back in 94. I went to LAPD because they had a course called Drug Recognition Expert Program. And that was, and I don't know how the legislation in California is right now, but back then it was illegal to be, let's see if I remember this correctly, to be under the influence, not to consume. As in Sweden, it's illegal to consume drugs. And
yes,
we only have, we can, if we take a urine sample, we can say, oh, you consume amphetamine and cannabis, because we can see it in your urine. But as I remember, you guys had to prove that people were under the influence, as we can see maybe walk the line and everything, they can't, and they can't put the finger to their nose or and everything. How do you, how is the legislation now where you work?
It's pretty similar.
It's
so you would still have to prove that they're under the influence, or it's called a impaired.
Yeah.
They're impaired, driving driving or operating a motor vehicle while impaired by either alcohol, drugs, or even prescription medication can count as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
So do you do these at this DRE unit? They taught us to do this like 12-step program to, and that was really interesting because people had to do this kind of test, they walk the line, put the finger to the nose, and we, they had to look at a pen and everything. And afterwards, the American police officer in California wrote down what he thought. Like, I think this individual is under the influence or impaired because he couldn't walk the line. He couldn't blah, blah. In Sweden, a police officer never will write down what he thinks. He always just writes down the facts.
Yes.
No one is interested in Sweden what the police officer thinks. Just report what you saw and everything.
Correct.
Not what you think.
Yeah.
How is it where you work? Do you like, I think he is or some, something?
Yeah. It depends on your training and experience.
Yeah.
If you're fresh out of the academy and you haven't gone to any specialized courses such as these drug recognition expert or field sobriety type courses, and you just stop some vehicle and you notice the driver appears that he or she's had a drink of alcohol or two, without the training and experience and those courses, it's very difficult for you to say, oh, I believe they're under the influence of this. This is my belief. You need the training, the experience, and all these certificates to be able to make an assumption and really voice your belief. Without that training and experience, your belief is really means nothing.
I understand.
Yeah.
Because it's really interesting because, I mean, we get trained from when we're really, I mean, young to see, I mean, to detect that someone is under the influence of, for example, alcohol. It's we know that because we saw we've seen people, but it's, and some substances are more easy to detect than others.
Yes,
alcohol is easy.
But you do you have to do like a lot of them for like a lot of the tests just to like detect if they're either under the influence of alcohol or. Or like any like amphetamine or anything like that. Like maybe that's interesting to see. Like, cause you have a couple of like the learning of that, correct?
Yes, I've been sent to several courses regarding like the drug recognition expert training and then the field sobriety testing and all these things. So, yeah, you have to do multiple tests, not just one test. And then there's even a certain rules and requirements of how you conduct the test.
Yeah.
Because then when it goes to court, you have to be able to testify as to how you did these tests and why you arrested this person.
Yeah.
So you have to be pretty spot on. You can't just wing it or guess.
I understand. Yeah. No, yeah, I think you're definitely more strict over there because you have to do it in a certain way and you have to stop people in a certain way. Mm-hmm. I always ask my guests about a story or a case that they experienced as a police officer that is stuck in their mind for some reason. Do you have a story like that?
I do. So
let's hear this one. I'm interested.
Okay. So this maybe a year after getting off of training, maybe a little less than that. I was working the night shift, which we would get off every morning, the following morning at about 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And for some reason, all my partners and everybody got to the station a little early. Maybe about 7 in the morning, and they had already taken all their equipment out of their vehicles and started putting everything away, and were just getting ready to go home. And I had been told by a more senior officer, hey, don't always get into the habit of going back to the station and putting your stuff away so early, because you never know what might happen at the last minute. Because when we have our shift change, there's no overlap.
Yeah, okay, I understand.
So when the morning shift comes in, they usually go out to their cars at 7:30 when we're coming back in. Yeah. So there's no overlap there. So, it's better to stay a little bit. And even if you're late a few minutes, at least there's somebody out there working to answer calls. So I did that, and I remember it was 7:25. I said, it's almost 7:30. It's close enough. I'll drive back to the station. And I started driving back to the station, and I got right to the big gate where you drive your car into the station. And I got sent a call to an alarm system went off at a business, which is very common. Alarms go off all the time. And, you probably go to, thousands of alarm calls, and they always end up being nothing.
That's a false alarm.
It's always a false alarm. And so I'm like, okay. And said, all right, well, I guess I'll go. So I turn my car around and I start driving down the street. And then a neighbor of the business alarm called and said, hey, it appears that there's two men with like hooded sweaters inside the business.
Okay.
And it doesn't look like it's open. And it looks like they're just grabbing things inside the business. Like they're just grabbing everything they can find. So it's very odd. And then the owner of that business, it was a like a gold and coin store. Okay. So they had like collectible and valuable types of just money, rare coins, little artifacts and whatnot. And he had cameras inside, and he got a notification on his phone saying, hey, there's activity in your store on your cameras. So he looked and saw, and he called us, our dispatcher, and said, hey, there's somebody robbing my business. This isn't a false alarm. So I'm getting this information sent to my computer as I'm driving to this business, and all my partners are already putting their stuff away and probably turning off their radios.
So you're maybe alone?
Yes. Essentially, yes. So I tell my dispatcher, I said, hey, I'm upgrading my response to emergency, which is where we turn all the lights and sirens on and, you roll, it's called code 3 in America. I don't know what it's called here, but, all the bells and whistles, very loud, very fast. So I start driving down there faster. You can take a freeway or highway to the business. It's a little faster route, so I took that route. And as I'm pulling off the freeway to make the turn to go to the business, the dispatcher tells me, hey, the vehicle has driven off with the suspects, and this is the vehicle description. And it has a paper, like a dealer license plate on the back. It doesn't have an actual license plate with numbers.
Okay.
Which thieves usually put, false plates on their cars, so they can't be found later. So okay. And I see a vehicle that matches that description of the suspect vehicle at the light. And we're pretty much, perpendicular at the light at the four-way intersection.
You're kind of facing each other, right?
They see you also.
Yes. And as I look in, I see two subjects that match the, you know, the suspects that were seen in the building, and their seats are both reclined as far back as they can almost go. Okay. So it almost looks like they're, you know, hiding, really, really leaning back far.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming, I'm like, okay, this is very suspicious. So the vehicle, they get the light, and they make the left turn, and they start to pass me, and they're leaned back, you know, trying to avoid eye contact with me. And as the vehicle passes me, I'm able to see that it has a paper plate.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, this has to be the car. So I do a little quick illegal U-turn with my lights and sirens, so it's not illegal anymore.
And just need to clarify that.
Yes. And as soon as I get behind the vehicle, it immediately accelerates.
Okay.
It just takes off on me, and then we go into a pursuit on the highway. So it's about 7:30 in the morning, and I'm in pursuit of this car by myself. And first thing I ask is, hey, do we have a helicopter that can come help? Because that's very, very helpful.
Yeah.
When they can track the car. Because I don't know how it works here, but usually when a helicopter's over above, they are the ones calling the pursuit, the direction, the street change, everything.
Yeah.
So I call and they said, nope, there's not one available. And I'm like, great, thanks. So then my other partners start realizing, like, oh man, because this, from the time the call came out to the point that I'm in pursuit with this car was less than like 4 minutes.
Okay.
So it's very quick.
Yeah.
So they're realizing what's happening, and they're starting to, you know, fly that way towards me. And I'm chasing this car, and you know, we're in one person per car, so I'm having to drive with one hand and then talk on the radio with the other.
Yeah.
So, and I'm having to put out, you know, the direction of travel, speeds, traffic condition, any violations the car is committing, you know, where we're going. And so I'm doing this, and we're driving about towards the end of the pursuit, maybe 150 miles an hour.
Oh, that's a lot.
Which is pretty fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
With driving with one hand on the radio and the other hand on the wheel.
And that's not 150 kilometers.
No.
Because it's a lot more.
I think that's like about 200. Yeah.
Like 220 maybe. Even.
Yeah, 200 kilometers. Really fast. Yeah.
What kind of car do you drive?
A Ford Explorer.
Of course, yeah. A Ford.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, we have no Volvos in in California. So yeah, and then we're driving, and I believe their vehicle couldn't go any faster because most vehicles have like a governor that reduces the speed. So I stay on their tail. They stop on the freeway.
Okay.
They slow down to a stop. I almost rear-ended them because I didn't expect them to stop. And the freeways we're at, they're about six lanes in each direction with the center median dividing. So there's 12 total lanes of traffic.
Yeah.
They stop on the freeway, and I stop behind them, and two very, very large men jump out of the car, out of the front seats.
On each side.
So one on each side, one on the driver's seat, one on the passenger seat. They both jump out, and then they look at me, and I pull my gun out, and I point it at them, and I tell them to stop, and they both run towards the side of the road, the embankment.
Yeah.
They both run out that way, and I proceed to chase them for across the freeway for maybe 30 meters or so. And then I realize, okay, if I keep running on the freeway, I'm probably going to get hit by a car because cars are, you know, going very fast, you know, probably, I don't know, maybe 120 kilometers.
Yeah.
You know, per hour. So I realized, okay, I need to go back to my car. So I start telling, you know, the other officers on the radio, hey, they ran this way. This is what they look like. You know, start setting up a perimeter to trap them. And they start going that way. And then other city departments that were close by started helping too, which is good. That was very helpful. And I stayed with the vehicles on the freeway. And me by myself, I cleared and checked the vehicle to make sure nobody was in it, and there wasn't. It was just full of all the coins and gold and things that they had stolen.
Oh yeah.
And they ended up running into a building, like a commercial building that was closed, and they broke a window and went inside and they hid. And then we ended up getting police canines there, and they flushed them out of the building, and then they gave up.
So you got them.
Yeah, so we ended up getting them. which is great. So yeah, it was a lot of different moving pieces and things going on, and the vehicle, and then it ended up being a stolen vehicle. And you know, there was other, all kinds of drugs and other things in the car, and then all the stuff they stole and all the tools that they used to commit the robbery.
Yeah,
of course. And, all these things. And it was, very intense. Yeah.
Was that like your first, chase? I mean, and all by yourself, how was that feeling? I mean, to know that you were on your own, actually, cause you were on your own, no chopper and nothing.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. I felt that I was trained well enough and had done enough like driving training to catch them and stay with the vehicle. But it was nerve wracking, having to handle radio traffic and chase at the same time, because typically when we have a pursuit, we usually have three officers, in the pursuit minimum. And usually the car in front is the one that chases the car. The second is the one that calls all the radio traffic out. So that way the front car can just worry on following and not having to talk on the radio at the same time. So usually that's how we do it, but I had to play both parts.
Yeah.
So a little extra stress there.
Yeah, yeah, of
but
course.
Yeah, it was good. It was exciting. My heart rate was definitely very, very high.
Yeah.
And very funny, because that morning he texted me. He's like, "Babe, am I on the radio or like on the TV?" And I'm like, "Why would you be on the news? Like, why would you be on the TV news?" And he's like, "I was just in a pursuit. I'll be home soon." I'm like, "Oh my God." So bad.
Is it often that they go on the air? I mean, to if there's a pursuit in the, on the highway?
I think so. We don't have cable, so we don't have like the TV, like news. Mm. So, but like, I think they show a lot, like,
cause the local media.
Yeah, exactly. So they have a lot of like reporters everywhere, and like, especially like anything that happens, they kind of report.
Yeah, a lot of the reporters have the like those police radios in their car, so they listen.
Yeah.
And when something exciting happens,
they go there.
They go there, yeah.
But canines, do you have canines at your
department? Yes.
Yeah,
we do. We just we had a period of about 8 years where we didn't have canines, because they had gotten rid of the program due to budget issues and other things, but we just got them back less than a year ago, so now
they're really useful.
Oh, very, very, very useful. But there are a lot of limitations.
Yeah,
such as you can't use them for crowd control.
No,
because if they accidentally bite somebody who's not a criminal, that could be very bad.
Okay.
So you can only, there's very strict requirements to when you can bring them and use them. It usually has to be a very high level crime, felony in America,
okay.
I call it,
as
felony crime, such as like a burglary in progress, a robbery, bank robbery, a police chase, things like that.
And canine is in Swedish hundförare.
Yeah.
Hund. Okay, this is really interesting to talk to a police officer from California. In the end, I always ask my guests about when you go to the movies or you sit at home in your couch and you're looking at a movie. What do you think about cop movies?
I think they can be a little bit over dramatic sometimes.
Yeah.
I think people's view of what cops do in America can be a little bit skewed because of some movies and TV shows.
Yeah.
We have this thing, it's called this CSI effect, and it's because, you know, you go to a call, let's say somebody's car got broken into and their things were stolen. They assume that we can pull DNA and fingerprints off everything, and we'll have the criminal found in, you know, a matter of minutes, which is, as you can, you know, as well, is not true.
No, it's not true.
It's not. So some shows and movies don't portray things the way they actually are. Give people a little bit of a false sense of what it really is.
Yeah.
And I mean, you also know a lot of it's, there's a lot of paperwork involved, a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
The majority of the job is paperwork.
Yeah.
And you know, things of that nature.
Sad.
Yeah, it is. Really, the chase, like I described, that's probably 5% of the job, you know, or less.
Yeah.
Really, so it's...
And you really have to describe everything, how it happened and what you did and how you pulled the car over and everything, where they went.
Yeah, that report for that police chase was probably about 10 pages worth of just narrative.
Oh, my God.
From what I did, yeah. Because I had to document each... Not only, you know, the notes of what the dispatcher was telling me with the call, you know, what things were taken, what kind of, you know, how, which way they were driving. Then I have to describe each. If, let's say I was chasing them, they made a lane change without doing a signal. I have to mention that.
Oh, my God.
If they're driving in excess of the speed for the road, I had to mention that.
Oh.
If they made an...
You have to remember it first.
Yes. But the good thing is we have video footage in the car.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
that's
I just have to look over the video and then describe it in my report. Yes.
Oh,
but
okay.
So that helps. Okay. But yeah, a lot of writing. But the police shows are... some of them are good. You know, some of the movies are good. But, you know, they're...
You watched them, though.
I do watch them. I do watch them. And
so can you recommend something?
Yeah. As far as TV shows, there's a little bit older show. I believe it's you can watch it through like streaming websites, but it was originally on HBO.
Yeah.
It's called The Wire.
Oh, it's great.
That one is one of the ones that is more accurate as to how things actually happen and the information and investigation needed to really get warrants and, you know, track people's actions and, you know, get phone taps and, you know, how investigations are actually done.
And it also shows, it actually shows both sides. I mean, also the criminal viewpoint in some way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also interesting to,
yes,
to watch.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, The Wire is a great show.
Yeah,
I really like that show. And then a more newer series, Mindhunter.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. That one, I think, deals more with like the criminology and the science and the psychology and the psychopathy that you know, learn, some may learn, and how criminals' minds work.
Yeah.
And that one's very interesting, too.
Two great shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for coming to Snutsnack.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
The premier American guest. Thank you very much, Jose. Thank you, Minna.
Thank you.
Also for coming. And have a nice day in Stockholm.
Yes.
And nice holidays also.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
You too.
It's Christmas soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Tack för att du har lyssnat på ett avsnitt av Snutsnack och premiäravsnittet med en utländskt talande gäst, nämligen Jose från Kalifornien. Det går en vecka och sen kommer ett nytt avsnitt och jag hoppas verkligen att du lyssnar då också. Ha det jättebra fram till dess. Hej då!